broadcast out of New York City. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, July 2nd, 2012. I am Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time and from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Time. And remember that our shows are archived on DrSaputo.com and PRN.fm.
Today you're going to hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. We got a great show for you today that's going to include, oh, here we go, how the Affordable Care Act has stood up to the Supreme Court and what that means for you.
And the United States Preventive Services Task Force has proclaimed that vitamin D and calcium should not be taken. Now, what about more new data showing that they reduce mortality in the elderly, plus much more?
And the CDC is at it again. This corrupt, conflicted organization should be gotten rid of. And now they're claiming back in 2009 that swine flu deaths weren't 18,500, but a mere 280,000 to 480,000. What are they thinking?
And if you want to join in our conversation and have questions about our topics or your health, you can give us a call on Mondays from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Time or 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN.fm at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Everybody's talking about the Affordable Health Care Act and how it passed. Now, is this really a victory?
Well, Vicki, you know, on the eve of July 4th, Independence Day, this is kind of ironic. Because if there's anything that's the opposite of our rights, it's this Affordable Care Act.
You know, it's affordable for the 30 million that can't afford health care who qualify, but what about the quality of their care? And what about the 47 million working Americans without health insurance who now be required to buy health insurance or be taxed for it?
Sure. And what about the 100 million people that have a limited amount of insurance? It's insufficient, which actually is the leading cause of bankruptcy today. We're just, most of us are about one illness away from bankruptcy. It's a big deal, and here we have this act that's coming in that's forcing us to buy insurance. It's being called the tax by the Supreme Court, but in reality, what's happening is we're losing our rights. We're losing the flexibility of being able to choose the kind of care we want, and the burden is on who? It's the people we're trying to protect the most. It's the oppressed middle class that's paying taxes. They're the ones that are doing it.
It's also forcing everybody to have conventional medicine.
Exactly. Where do you get the complementary alternative services from a system like this that only appreciates the use of drug surgeries and technologies, throws in a tiny bit of acupuncture sometimes and a tiny bit of chiropractic, and thinks that it's giving us medical freedom? But we have to remember on this Independence Eve that we don't have medical freedom. Our forefathers never gave us medical freedom in the U.S. Constitution back in 1776. So what we have is a situation that's played itself out, and we're sitting in the remains of what that caused today. And that's why we have all these conflicts about how are we going to get the kind of health care we want.
The other thing, too, is, you know, this was put up to a vote without much of it even being understood or even being read. Because remember when it was first discussed and how there were 2,500 pages to it and most of those voting on it couldn't understand it without hiring an attorney to decipher it?
I mean, isn't that the weirdest thing? All of a sudden, you got this huge document that you don't understand, and what you're instructed to do is to vote on it anyway and we'll figure it out later. It's like, who the heck wrote this bill in the first place? I mean, who really wrote this bill? Was it the insurance industry? Was it the pharmaceutical industry? Was it what the conspiracy theorists would say, that it was organizations like the Illuminati or others? It makes you wonder about things like that.
Well, it sure makes money for the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies and Western medicine.
At the expense of we the people, the middle class, the ones that are paying the taxes that run this country.
Well, you know, how is this going to work? We've already broached this before, but how is this going to work with 30 million people more to cover with the same budget?
Well, that's right. I mean,
it's with by taxing us, I guess.
Well, that's what this thing is all about. I mean, health care costs are not going to be going down. We know that the cost of living is going up and that the cost of health care is going up at a rate that's three or four or five times faster than the cost of living is going up. So we're winding up getting ourselves in a deeper hole. The gross national product now is about 18% that's devoted to health care, and it's rising. And the services that we're getting are going down, and they'll go down even more. I mean, we lose about 2% a year of Medicare, according to legislation that was passed by Obama in the last year or two. 2% a year for 10 years, that's 20% of the services from Medicare. We were supposed to be getting better health care. And what we're getting is less of the bad health care system that we have. And, of course, that's another story, because the Affordable Care Act may do something to give more insurance to people, but it sure as hell is not going to be giving us any better health care. I mean, it's insufficient. It's necessary to have universal health care, but it's insufficient because we need a health care system that actually serves us by giving us wellness and prevention and giving us rights to pick the kind of therapies that we want to choose. All these things are just not big factors.
You know, people are complaining already about how it's so difficult to get in to see a doctor, and the doctors are always rushing them through and all that kind of thing. Well, when we have this Medicaid sort of system with this Affordable Health Care Act with low funding, it seems like it's going to be more difficult to see doctors, especially when it's being flooded with 30 million more people.
Well, doctors don't want to do Medicaid or Medi-Cal.
That's what I mean. Sure. They might not make themselves available
either.
Well,
they won't. You know why? Because they'll make less, and a lot less. And very few doctors will take Medicaid or Medicare in California. Not Medicare, I keep saying that. Medicaid or Medi-Cal. So what we have is more people in the system, less money to spend, fewer doctors to provide the services, and what you see is a financially driven healthcare system that's not serving we the people.
Also, where's the freedom when we're required to buy health insurance?
Well, that's right.
Yeah, so we're required to buy it or else we're taxed.
Well, that is a tax. They're calling it a tax. You can call it what you want. And I don't really want to get so much into the politics of what's going on, although we've certainly spent a lot of time in the show already talking about that. The main thing as a doctor, okay, as a medical doctor, as a board-certified internist, that I want to get across is I think that the quality of care has deteriorated to a terrible place in this country. There are three major problems. One is cost. When you've got 18% of the GDP that's being spent on health care, which is twice as much or three times as much as most other industrialized countries, and we're still ranked 37th in the world in the overall quality of health care that we get because of disparities and who can and can't get the best health care. And then you've got a problem with safety, because we're looking at probably close to 1 million people that are dying every year, according to Gary Noll's article called Death by Medicine. It's a very well-referenced, outstanding article that I think is factual. You've got a big problem. And then you look at the fact that the system doesn't even work, because if it did, how would 50% of us have a chronic illness that is going on all the time? So these are major reasons why we need another healthcare system, one that's based on something that's affordable, that's safe, and that actually works. And the answer there is prevention. It's wellness. It's nutrition.
Especially with 50% of Americans having chronic diseases.
That's right. So we have to do something that's more than provide the same inadequate, insufficient, failing system that we're using today. It's economically driven and motivated, and the rewards that come back are mostly financial, because we're not doing that well. I mean, when World Health Organization ranks us 37th in the world, that's near the bottom of the list there. And it's not because we don't have great technology and great information. We do have all that. I'm quite sure we're the best there. But when you see the disparities that leave half of America underinsured and 47 million mostly working Americans with no insurance at all, I mean, what good does it do to have great health insurance if you can't get it, or you can't get medical care?
Well, there are a couple things that are good about it.
Oh, well,
you know, they're covering pre-existing conditions. A lot of people
yes.
are really happy about that.
Yes.
And adult children up to 26 can be covered by their parents' plans, and this is helpful for a lot of young people that have just gotten out of college with debts and so forth. And
well, that's really right. I mean,
their loans and
yeah. Well, see, there's I would say that's a good thing, too. And yet, at the same time, it's a bad thing from the point of view that it's doing something to give we the people hope that this system is workable. And the problem is...
Well, that's why they throw a few good things in there.
Well, it keeps you inspired and thinking, oh, yeah, they're coming to my rescue. But the problem we really have is that the system doesn't work. And what I mean when I say that isn't that we want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We do not want to get rid of Western medicine. That would be stupid. What's stupid is to start with it. It's too expensive, aggressive, and doesn't work in the way of preventing health care. And that keeps driving up costs and keeps us sick. We don't need that. But what we do need is a good program that keeps us well. And that's doable today. We know how to do that, but nobody much is interested because the values in this country are centered around what? About how we're going to go about keeping the economy working and people making as much money as they can. And in a capitalistic system that's not being handled in the best way, you wind up with people being very narcissistic, self-centered, economically driven, not caring about community, taking what they can get, as opposed to a community where we're loving and sharing and caring and supporting one another and listening and caring. We have to evolve.
Well, you know, too, I just have a couple more questions here. Will the tax help keep the insurance premiums affordable?
Not that I know of. I think that insurance companies can charge whatever the market will bear.
So the insurance hikes are not going to have, like, limits.
Not
and
that I know of.
Insurance companies could get together and raise the rates.
Oh, you mean could get together? You know darn well, as illegal as that is, it happens all the time. That's why we have courts and why we have lawsuits and why we have the indiscretions that we do, because we're worried about what? The bottom line, which is financially driven.
So this is all not really about health care reform. This is about insurance reform.
Yes, a little tiny bit of insurance reform, but who the heck do you think really wrote this bill? I'd have to say, if I were in the insurance company or I was in the pharmaceutical industry, I'd have written this bill. But if I was just an ordinary person, nothing like this would ever have gotten into print. And you certainly wouldn't have had over 2,000 pages, much of which is not understandable. One of the huge problems this country has, and I think this is a very, very serious problem, is that we don't have legislation that looks at just one thing. We have a corrupt kind of legislative process in Congress, because what they do is they pass favors back and forth. I'll do this if you'll do that for me. Well, I'll include this in this bill if you'll vote for this bill. And that's how they get majorities to pass the bills that they do. That's no way to run a country. The way to run a country is to have everything be transparent so you know exactly what's happening, and then you take some kind of action that we the people can see and can give you our blessings or our naysayings about it. What kind of a democracy is this?
I also want to stress again, too, about how this is all just focused on Western medicine, you know. It's the same medical system that we already know is responsible for killing, 100,000 Americans a year?
Almost a million a year. You know, 400,000 from drugs, then all kinds of other problems that we see with mistakes and infections in the hospital and all this stuff. We're reading about MRSA and C. difficile and other infections like that, and it's just the wrong operation.
Well,
I mean,
the other thing is, too, is that maybe eventually they can force us to have medical treatments that we don't really even want, or force us to have vaccinations.
See, now you're talking about what's next, okay? And you've got to look at things like that. And while it's not in law now, it could be if this direction continues. And you're right. They could force treatments. They could force immunizations. They could incarcerate you and fine you for refusing care. They could be using FEMA, okay, those camps, to incarcerate people who say no. And that was something that came up with the swine flu, you know, back in when that was a hot issue in 2009. That was a huge issue that gave the president the authority to do what was necessary to make sure if in his opinion, that something had to be done in a different way. They could force treatment.
Now, we're going to talk more about that when we talk about the CDC and all the deaths from the swine flu later on in our show.
I know. So you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We're opening up the lines. So give us a call if you have a question about what we're talking about or about a particular health problem you have, and we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
I have some new ABCs for you besides the A, B, C, D, F, G. A is for apple, B is for boat.
Oh, yeah.
That used to be right, but now it won't float.
Uh-oh.
Age before beauty is what we once said, but let's be a bit more realistic instead. Now the alphabet. A is for arthritis.
Uh-oh.
B is the bad back. C is the chest pain.
This is an aging alphabet or aging people, huh?
Perhaps cardiac. D is for dental decay and decline. E is for eyesight. Can't read that top line. F is for farting and fluid retention. G is for gut droop, which I'd rather not mention. H, high blood pressure. I'd rather it low. I for incisions with scars you can show. J is for joints out of socket won't mend. K is for knees that crack when they bend. L is for libido. What happened to sex? M is for memory. I forgot what comes next. N is for neuralgia in nerves way down low. O is for osteo, bones that don't grow. P for prescriptions. I have quite a few. Just give me a pill and I'll be good as new. Q is for queasy. Is it fatal or flu? R is for reflux. One meal turns to two. S is for sleepless nights, counting my fears. T is for tinnitus, bells in my ears. U is for urinary, troubles with flow. V for vertigo. That's dizzy, you know. W for worry. Now, what's going around? X is for x-ray and what might be found. Y for another year I'm left here behind. Z is for zest I still have in my mind. Well, I've survived all the symptoms my body's deployed, and I'm keeping 26 doctors fully employed. Oh, and if you can't afford a doctor, go to an airport. You'll get a free x-ray and a breast exam, and if you mention Al-Qaeda, you'll get a free colonoscopy.
Well, Vicki, humor is a great tool to make us feel better. And the problem is really here is how true a lot of what you're talking about is. It's hard sometimes for us to accept that we have this thing called a life cycle, a beginning, a middle, and an end. And what it really requires is a lot of really appreciating that nature knows what it's doing. At least it seems that way some of the time. But as this alphabet comes into play, it really shows you that as you age, what you wind up with is what you have learned as the most powerful tool that we have. I wouldn't want to give up a day to go back and have a slightly better body that does things better if I had to be as dumb as I was yesterday. Because I think every day we learn new things that hopefully will take us to another level, although I see a lot of people who are losing their minds as well, and that, of course, is a very sad scenario. So we have to do what we can to work on our healthcare system to make it preventive-oriented and have programs that work to help keep us inspired to live in communities where we're supporting one another and operating in a way where we're giving and sharing and loving rather than taking and being independent and adversarial. We don't need all these wars that we have, but we seem to fight them on a regular basis and at the same time step over those veterans and who fought in the wars before us who are now in the streets of our major cities and homeless. So thanks for the wake-up call, Vicki. That's great stuff.
And if anybody wants to join in any of our conversations here or you have questions about your health, the number here at Prescriptions for Health is 888-874-4888. That's 874-4888. We've got a lot of eights in there.
Oh. Lucky eights, huh?
You know, we talked about vitamin D and calcium last week and how they can lower death rates in women over 70 and how the D and the calcium can reduce colon and breast cancer risks.
Yeah, they increase the survival rate, okay, by 9% if you're on this. So kind of an interesting statistic, I think.
And yes, there also can be problems with taking D and calcium, but overall the study showed that it reduced mortality. And if you recall, we need a proper balance of vitamin D and calcium, and too much of one or the other can lead to health issues.
Well, that's easy to solve, you know, Vicki, because all you have to do is measure your vitamin D level and find out what it is. And if it's low, you may have a problem, right?
That's right. That's how you need to do it. But first, it's right. But I was going to ask about this article that just came out. If you recall, we need this proper balance, but too much of one or the other can lead to these health issues. But is it right to throw the baby out with the bathwater? Well, this week, the United States Preventive Services Task Force flat out says that postmenopausal women should not take vitamin D or calcium supplements at all, period. Nada.
Well,
so let's break through this confusion.
I mean, these academic purists give me a pain in the backside. You know, there's a place for something called common sense. If you're going to take a risk with something, take a risk that doesn't have a huge consequence. What's the consequence of taking a little vitamin D and a little bit of calcium? Nada. How many people die every year from vitamin D or calcium overdoses? None. No deaths. It's as rare as a hen's tooth. So let's spend our time arguing about whether vitamin D and calcium might be valuable, or maybe we're not exactly sure that it helps because we haven't done the studies. It's like saying acupuncture, we don't have as much data as we'd like to, so therefore we're not even going to take a look at it. That's insane thinking.
Well, you know, if you don't get enough sun, or you can't eat enough bioavailable calcium and vegetables and almonds for your calcium, supplements can be helpful. I mean, we, of course, the first line is to eat healthy and to get enough sun, but there are a lot of times when people can't do that.
Well, I think what these people at the United States Preventive Services Task Force are saying and the Institute of Medicine are saying is that in our little arrogant and naive system where we do studies that are supposed to be scientifically based, we can't prove beyond a doubt that vitamin D and calcium are a good thing to do. And the problem is that we have an epidemic of heart disease, of cancer. We have an epidemic of osteoporosis. A lot of people are getting depressed because of having a low vitamin D level. There are many, many illnesses that are associated with low vitamin D. Now, do we have a lot of data that shows that replacing with vitamin D and calcium is something that will be valuable for us? Well, not a lot, but we have some. I mean, Vicki talked about the fact that we have this study that shows that if you take it and you're at about age 70, you replace with calcium and vitamin D, that your chances of dying are 9% lower. I mean, that's something that's real. There was a study out in the last couple of months saying that if you have coronary artery problems and a low problem with vitamin D and you replace it, that the risk for getting heart attacks and strokes would go down. I mean, these are all things that lead us in a direction that makes sense. And to take the arrogant position that says, well, we don't have quite enough data, you know, doesn't mean don't do it.
You know, for months now, there have been new articles coming out weekly, probably more than weekly,
daily
almost, about the benefits of vitamin D. So how can they just, like, ignore that? I mean, we know that low vitamin D can increase the risk of cancer and diabetes and hypertension and heart attacks.
You know, what they're saying is that if you replace it, where's the data that shows that it actually protects you? And I would say there's an overwhelming balance that is epidemiological in its source that shows that this is likely. In fact, we know that, you know, they came out and said that vitamin D and calcium might increase the risk of kidney stones. Well, they haven't even read the recent literature that shows that that's as contrary as that is to your intuitive nature. The data shows that it actually lowers the risk of kidney stones. So they got it. This whole organization got it wrong. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, I think sometimes they don't even pay attention to their own studies.
Well, there's so much information out there. The real problem is that you can collect information to support the point of view that you have, and there's enough out there that's different that you can build a case for just about anything. So here we have the United States Preventive Services Task Force and the Institute of Medicine taking one point of view, and you're hearing Dr. Lynn and Nurse Vicki's point of view that's totally different.
I mean, sure, you can take things out like we were talking about earlier to say that certain things are good and certain things are bad with any situation, like we were just doing with the Affordable Health Care Act. But like high D without calcium, it can lead to osteoporosis. Vitamin D without enough calcium and magnesium can increase toxic metals. Calcium alone can increase heart attacks. High calcium with low D can lead to calcification of soft tissues like arteriosclerotic heart disease. But overall, these minerals are and vitamins are essential to our health.
That's just your common sense, and that's your bottom line. You're
this listening is why to, you need to talk to your healthcare practitioner and do these blood levels.
You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, and we'll be back taking your calls after a short station break.
You might be happy to know that even mild exercise may decrease your risk of breast cancer unless you're obese, but the exercise may help you to maintain your weight anyway. So how does exercise work to prevent breast cancer?
That's a really good question, and when you understand this, you'll be more motivated to do it because these are powerful tools that will help to keep you healthier, not just in terms of preventing breast cancer, but all kinds of cancers and actually all illnesses. First of all, we know that when we exercise, we detox, right? We sweat a lot. And a lot of the toxins that are in the environment are stored in our fat. You know, the study called the Body Burden looked at 9 people scattered throughout the U.S., and they measured the amount of pollutants that they had in their body by checking blood and urine levels. And what they found after checking for about 150 or 200 different chemicals, that no one had less than about 70 stored in their fat, and many people had in the range of 120 or 150. So we're looking at a huge burden there of things that are toxic to our body, and the way we get rid of it...
Well, first of all, though, I just wanted to comment that the breasts contain a lot of fat.
Yeah, indeed.
So we have a lot of toxins that are stored in our breasts, and we know that there's toxins in breast milk even.
Right. So how do you get rid of them then? Well, first of all, it would be good not to have them. So it would be nice if we were environmentally conscious with the things that we did, and we'd put some kind of restrictions because people, with their goodness of heart, don't just volunteer to do things like that because they want the money from whatever product it is that they're making that causes pollution to occur. So when we exercise, we sweat, and of course that's when the fat containing compounds, the carcinogens and neurotoxins and the things that cause defects in babies, all come into a place where that you can get them more excreted. So exercise hard, you sweat more.
And another thing that's good to know is that when you do perspire like that, it's good to wash it off. Because
exactly.
Otherwise a lot of it's reabsorbed.
Exactly. So when you've finished exercising and you've sweat a lot of the stuff that sweat off of you and gone into your clothing or into the environment...
On your skin.
Yeah, will be excreted. But the stuff that's left on your skin within the next hour or so is going to be reabsorbed. So it's good to take a little, a shower or a bath or whatever you want to do to wash the rest off and get it to go down the drain rather than back into your fatty tissues.
Another thing that's kind of interesting to note here is that it's recommended when you've been out in the sun that you can kind of like wash off the vitamin D, so it's better not to use soap on the areas of your skin that were exposed to the sun.
That too, and even a chlorinated pool will do the same thing. So when you're making a lot of vitamin D, okay, because of sunlight, a lot of it's on the skin itself, and it can be lost. So that's a good point.
And the vitamin D is good for preventing breast cancer also.
Indeed. We know that low levels of vitamin D increase your risk for lots of cancers substantially. Another thing that exercise does is it makes your mitochondria reproduce. Now, what's a mitochondria? Those are the energy packets in the cell that make ATP. Gasoline runs a car, ATP runs your cells. Without gasoline, your car won't run, and without ATP, your cells don't work. And it's one of the things that happens in cancer, is you wind up with less energy production for your normal cells than you would like. So the exercise would be anti-cancerous, it would give you protection against cancer if you have these mitochondria that are proliferating at a rate that's faster. And then lastly, we have a lowering of estrogen levels when we exercise. So estrogen, you know, is one of the carcinogens that causes breast cancer, colon cancer, and prostate cancer.
As well as other things.
So it's a very, yeah, and so it's a good thing to exercise hard so you can lower your levels of estrogen.
And also exercising increases our endorphins and makes us feel better, depression isn't good for, depression have something to do with breast cancer, increasing your risk for breast cancer?
I think a lot of people think that cancers in general have a better chance of developing if you're depressed, and there is literature supporting that as well as literature not supporting that. So.
And we know that exercise is good for depression. In fact, they've done studies on that that show that the exercise can be as effective as taking an antidepressant.
Right. If you exercise 1 hour three times a week, you get the same benefit in helping your depression as if you're taking Prozac in its full dose. And so it will last longer as well. So if you look back at 6 months and see those people who were treated by exercise and compare them with those people who were treated with Prozac or another SSRI antidepressant, that the incidence of depression will be lower in the group that had the exercise. So exercise does so many good things that keep us healthy that it's something we should be considering, and it's not just because of preventing breast cancer. Look at the effect on the heart in preventing arteriosclerosis, and in your lungs in increasing vital capacity, and in our muscle strength and our endurance and our overall ability to think better. You know, when you're getting older and you're at risk for Alzheimer's disease, one of the things that will help protect against that is good physical exercise. Of course, mental exercise on top of that's a big bonus too. So when you exercise, you're doing so many good things for your body. I don't know of any anti-aging strategy that comes close to having the effect on keeping us young than just exercise, because it raises our growth hormone levels, it raises testosterone levels, it balances our hormones in a positive way. It's just a very good way to go.
It's a great type of anti-aging medicine.
It's the best there is. There's nothing close. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, and we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's final 2020 tip.
I have some cool facts about the human body. The scientists say that the higher your IQ, the more you dream. And the average human dreams lasts about, this is going to surprise you, 2 to 3 seconds.
That's hard to believe. They seem like it lasts forever.
And the largest cell in the human body is the female egg.
Mm-hmm.
And the smallest is the male sperm.
Oh, there you go.
And here's another interesting fact. You use 200 muscles to take one step, and your body uses 300 muscles to balance itself when you're just standing still.
Gee. It's a good thing we have an automatic nervous system, an autonomic nervous system.
Well, the main thing, I guess, is get off the couch.
Well, that's for sure.
The average woman's 5 inches shorter than the average man. And a woman's heart beats faster than a man's. And women blink twice as often as a man. Did you know that your big toes only have 2 bones? While the rest have 3?
Where do you get all these things, Vicki?
And human thigh bones are stronger than concrete.
Jeez. Well, not everybody's, but that's pretty good, because a lot of people, like me with a hip replacement, have something like concrete in there.
Well,
we've got
wore
metal.
It out. Concrete wears out after a while, too.
That's
but
a good
why
point.
Do we have all these potholes in the street?
There you go. You got a good point. I agree.
A pair of human feet contains 250,000 sweat glands.
That's hard to believe.
P.U. And there are about 1 trillion bacteria on each of your feet. What a combination.
Gee.
A full bladder is roughly the size of a softball. The acid in your stomach is strong enough to dissolve razor blades. Did you know if saliva can't dissolve something, you can't taste it?
Won't go into solution so it doesn't get to those taste buds. That's right.
The human brain cell can hold 5 times as much information as the Encyclopedia Britannica. So don't read the encyclopedia more than 4 times or you'll run out of room.
I'd like to see the guy that did that study. That's weird.
The average person's, here's one for you. The average person's skin weighs twice as much as the brain.
Well, some skinheads, I suppose, are like that.
It takes food 7 seconds to get from your mouth to your stomach. One human hair can support 6.6 pounds.
What do you do with your spare time, Vicki?
I floss my teeth with my hair. No. Men without hair on their chests are more likely to get cirrhosis of the liver than men with hair.
Gee, that's a good one.
Unless they drink too much, I guess. At the moment of conception, you spend about a half an hour as a single cell. Your body gives off enough heat in 30 seconds to bring half a gallon of water to a boil. You know, it must be about 30 seconds during a hot flash.
Maybe less, huh?
The enamel in your teeth is the hardest substance in your body. Your teeth start growing 6 months before you're born.
I think the only thing stronger than your teeth is popcorn.
Maybe. When you're looking at someone you love, your pupils dilate, and they do the same thing when you're looking at somebody you hate.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, here we go. Your thumb is the same length as your nose.
Huh.
And the average man's penis is 2 times the length of his thumb.
Now, where'd you get that one, Vicki? Is that a personal study?
At this very moment, I know people are checking their thumbs.
That's right.
Well, anyway, that was a body of facts.
I'll say. I don't know where you get things like that. I wonder how many of them are actually true. I bet most of them are. Fascinating.
Off the Internet. The Internet can give you all kinds of information.
That's true. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
So what do you think of the news from the CDC that just published in the June 2012 issue of Lancet that the 2009 swine flu outbreak was 15 times deadlier globally than originally estimated? You know, especially at a time when they counted everything with viral symptoms as a swine flu without even doing lab tests. I mean, how do they figure 15 times deadlier now?
Well, why did they even bother is what I want to know. I mean, here, that was 3 years ago, and what was the number that the World Health Organization came up with? 18,500 deaths. Now they're saying, no, it's 280,000 to 580,000 deaths. I think what they're doing is preparing for the flu season and trying to push this dumbass flu vaccine again, which, of course, is the biggest scam of all time.
Well, let's talk about what the CBS investigation found at the time.
Well, CBS, you know, the news organization, was looking to see what the incidence of swine flu really was, because back in the last part of 2009, when this so-called pandemic was happening, they wanted to really see what the numbers were. So they went to the CDC, Communicable Disease Center, and they said, can we see the data that you have that shows how many people have been reported to you from each state and what percentage of those people actually had swine flu and what percentage had other diseases that were like it? And the CDC says, we're not giving you that information. It's classified. And so under the Freedom of Information Act, they sent a lawsuit, okay, to the CDC, and they still refused to do it. And so CBS said something's fishy here, and they went to the states themselves and got the information. For example, they go to the state of California. There were 13,000 at that time cases that were submitted to the public health department, and they found that only 2% of the test samples from those 13,000 people were swine flu. And most of them weren't even flu at all.
You know, most of these cases they found were colds or just upper respiratory infections from other types of viruses and bacteria.
So what's the point then, Vicki, of the CDC trying to give the impression that we have a very serious illness that could be life-threatening and was a pandemic that should be very, very much respected? And why did the World Health Organization go along with it? Why did the White House look at the same thing and say this is a major problem?
Well, they stopped even counting the cases, and then they announced that it was a national emergency, and then they tripled the death count overnight, and calling this H1N1 a pandemic. So maybe what we should do is talk about what's a pandemic and how they changed the definition of pandemic.
Well, how convenient that was. Just about a month before this so-called pandemic occurred that started in Mexico, the definition by the World Health Organization, which previously was that a pandemic would be defined as the spread of an illness that had serious consequences, like the plague or the 1918 flu.
A lot of
people were injured and died and had serious consequences from it. That was what a pandemic was about. Then they took out the serious part so that it was no longer required and changed the definition to just mean that it'd be an illness of any kind, serious or not, that would spread among different countries of the world. And so based on that, World Health Organization comes up with a level 6, okay, which is the highest level you can have, that of course panics, or when you're talking about a pandemic and being potentially serious, is the highest level you could have, which puts everybody on edge to say this is an infection that's going all over the place. We have to worry that millions and millions of people, maybe billions, will be dying.
And showing people on TV wearing masks everywhere.
I mean, it was absolutely crazy because what the swine flu turned out to be was no more than a cold. It was no more serious than the usual influenza, and perhaps there were less deaths because they're saying that there are thousands and thousands of deaths every year from influenza, way more than 13,000.
They wanted to panic everybody to get the flu shot.
Well, that's what they accomplished.
Even though they kept the thimerosal, which is the mercury, in it, and then had the audacity to say that it was okay for pregnant women and babies, even though it had this mercury in it, because it was a state of emergency.
Well, that's what Schwarzenegger
did. And then they started claiming that there was a shortage of immunizations that were not even proven to work in the first place. But I think that they might have done that just to encourage people to want it more, you know?
Oh, you think so?
And then what happened with the mandatory immunizations of healthcare workers? What happened with that?
Well, that all fell apart, too. I mean, two governors took strong action. Governor Schwarzenegger, as you said, declared a state of emergency in California that meant that they would be willing to give this mercury-laden vaccine to women who were pregnant, which before that was against the law in California, but they'd make an exception. Then Governor Patterson of New York declared the same thing and said that everybody should have to take the immunization in New York. And thanks to Gary Null's good work, they went to court and got that dismissed. So what we have here is a conspiracy, is the only thing I can see that's happened, on the part of the CDC, the World Health Organization, the White House, all saying that this is a serious pandemic that could cause millions and millions of deaths. I think they predicted that 50% of America could be infected, that 2 or 3 million people would be hospitalized, and 30 to 90,000 people would die from it. Further from the truth.
They even had Dr. Oz on TV getting a shot, and then we found out later that he had a lot of money invested in stocks for vaccines.
Well, he had money invested in it, but the big thing there is he had a job, okay? And he had to support this because that's what his creator of his job were requiring.
But his wife and kids didn't get the flu vaccine.
Well, so he probably knew better, but if he wanted to preserve his ability to get to the American people and teach them good things about integrative medicine and about natural medicine, that he'd have to compromise, which is, of course, what he did.
Well, he should have been able to be talking about herbs and other supplements and things that can build up and boost people's immunity so that they wouldn't get the flu in the first place, or if they did, that it would help them naturally. Instead, the FDA started banning herbs and gave Andrew Weil a bad time, and they sent intimidating legal notices to herb retailers on the internet. They did that along with the Federal Trade Commission as well. But they said they didn't want people to take vitamin D or mushrooms or elderberry or echinacea or acai berries or olive leaf extract. They didn't even want people to use air filters. They got all upset about that because they just wanted them to have the shot.
So it's looking more and more like a conspiracy, isn't it? Because it doesn't make any medical sense for anybody to respond to something like this that's as innocuous as it was, and to make all of these little pieces of information magnified many, many times to look like they're really serious problems.
It's like the next thing you get in trouble for recommending a healthy lifestyle to boost your immunity.
And that would definitely be against the law.
And maybe we won't be able to buy garlic or mushrooms in the future.
Well, that's right. So what's happening here? I mean, when you look at the CDC and it takes the position it does, let's take a look at the past director, Dr. Julie Gerberding, okay, who was in charge of the CDC for probably about 8 years. Where does she work now? She's the president of vaccines at Merck, okay, the pharmaceutical company. Another government MD who passes, she's just another government MD who's passing through the revolving door that exists between the FDA and the CDC and Big Pharma.
She gets a huge salary, somewhere in the millions.
Well, we don't know the exact number because it hasn't been disclosed, but people in her position at other pharmaceutical companies are making between $2 and $6 million a year plus stock options. So you'd have to say that it's pretty interesting that the director of the CDC is now in a place where she's making a lot of money working for a pharmaceutical company. There's something wrong with that picture that's pretty obvious to see. So this whole epidemic, this whole pandemic, has gotten to be something that's way out of hand, and it's very annoying to me as a physician to see publications in a journal like The Lancet that are written by people who work at the CDC even 3 years later saying, oh, the low numbers that we had back in 2009 by the CDC and the World Health Organization were wrong. And there's really about 280,000 to 580,000 people who died from it globally. That's just an attempt to scare you again to buy this vaccine that's not been tested, by the way, and we don't really know if it works.
It doesn't have any effect on death rates. When immunizations are down, there's no rise in the death rates. And when 65% of 65-year-old people and over that get the flu vaccine, their deaths have actually increased.
Since the early 1980s, when 15% were taking it. So,
you know, Congress gave the H1N1 vaccine companies legal immunity from medical liability suits. And now Big Pharma has no financial incentive to make safe vaccines. And Congress gave $7 billion for the advance purchase of those vaccines. And nobody talked anything about the autism and Guillain-Barré. The government seemed to cover that up about the mercury that was in these vaccines. And there are other things in the vaccines besides even the mercury that are dangerous, things like antibiotics and even MSG and formaldehyde and aluminum and some adjuvants. You know, it's just crazy what we're doing. We are sheeple. We're following the crowd. We're just believing everything that we hear from the government. And so we need to take responsibility for our health and learn other things and learn the facts. You know,
Lynn wrote an
article that's on our website, drsaputo.com, that's called The Infection Deception. And I'd recommend, if you're interested in this topic and you're thinking anything about getting these vaccines, to
It was published in the Townsend Letter for Doctors and Patients, okay, back in 2009. It's about 15 pages long, and it's well-referenced, and it points out all these things that we've been talking about and brought up. And I'll just have to say that if the CDC and the FDA and the World Health Organization wanted to know the real truth about does this swine flu vaccine work or does it not work, it would be the easiest thing in the world to do a little study.
But they don't want to because they say it would be unethical because vaccines save lives.
Well,
that's how they cover themselves.
Well, it doesn't really cover them because there are many people who don't take the vaccine. All right? Those are the people that could be in one arm of the study, people who refuse to take the vaccine. The other arm of the study would be people who do take the vaccine. Then, over time, we could see, how did each of these groups do? What did the group who took the vaccine, what did they benefit from? Were there fewer cases of swine flu? Were they more mild? Were there fewer deaths? And what about the people who didn't take the vaccine? Did they have more of a problem? So this is an easy study to do.
There was a study that was done on 260,000 kids, and they found that the vaccine was no better than a placebo.
Exactly.
And they also collected data on 2,700 adults for 4 days. That's how they checked it for safety, over 4 days.
Yeah, well, that's hardly a very good study. So people like Thomas Jefferson, who is a physician who is regarded as maybe one of the world's foremost authorities in this whole business of influenza, is saying that a study should be done because it's so simple to do. It wouldn't cost much. It would answer it once and for all, and it could be an outcome that was done over a period of 6 months or a year. And you have to ask yourself the question, why isn't a study like that done? What possible reason could there be? It has to be something that's not good, because you want to know the answers, and they're basically wanting to keep it not transparent.
You know, speaking of a pandemic of a cold virus, I mean, what about declaring an epidemic of chronic diseases and people who die from medicine, like Gary Knoll's film, Death by Medicine?
Or how about trying to study more about the epidemic of diabetes that we know is killing people, or of heart attacks and strokes and cancer?
Yeah.
We should devote our time to things like that, that we know are doing something that really makes a difference. So this whole business of the flu vaccine, you know, for swine flu, to me is a joke. And I think there's no way in the world.
Except for it's not funny.
Well, no, it's a joke from the point of view that it's the most awful thing that I've seen in healthcare in a long time. And the fact that our doctors will promote this because the CDC is their holy grail is even more annoying, because you have to do the study. You have to read the literature as it comes out. You had to follow it over a period of months, okay, at least a year, which we did and reported on our radio shows sometimes on a daily basis, that this was really something that we should take good note of, so we know what was happening. So that's where we sit. Anyway, we're at the end of our show here.
We hope you're enjoying your 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, indeed. And I'd like to remind you that we'll be back to talk live about what's new in the news and health, and take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and DrSaputo.com from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Time. Prescriptions for Health will also be archived on DrSaputo.com as well as PRN.FM.
And if you have enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics we discussed, go to DrSaputo.com. Go to Dr. Saputo Radio on DrSaputo.com and check out our Fast Track videos. And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe, so if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
We hope you have a great week. Have a wonderful 4th of July. And remember that our democracy is in the hands of us. We have to reclaim it if we want to keep it. Take care.